The Valley of the Moon by Jack London. Book 1, Chapter 1. You hear me, Saxon? Come along. What if it is the bricklayers? I'll have gentlemen friends there, and so will you. The Alta Vista band'll be along, and you know it plays heavenly, and you just love dancing. 20 feet away, a stout elderly woman interrupted the girl's persuasions. The elderly woman's back was turned, and the back, loose, bulging, and misshapen, began a convulsive heaving. God, she cried out, God. She flung wild glances, like those of an entrapped animal, up and down the big whitewashed room that panted with heat and that was thickly humid with the steam that sizzled from the damp cloth under the irons of the many ironers. From the girls and women near her, all swinging iron steadily, but at a high pace, came quick glances, and labor efficiency suffered to the extent of a score of suspended or inadequate movements. The elderly woman's cry had caused a tremor of money loss to pass among the piecework ironers of fancy starch. She gripped herself and her iron with a visible effort, and dabbed futilely at the frail, frilled garment on the board under her hand. I thought she'd gotten him again, didn't you? The girl said. It's a shame, a woman of her age and condition, Saxon answered, as she frilled a lace ruffle with a hot fluting iron. Her movements were delicate, safe, and swift, and though her face was wan with fatigue and exhausting heat, there was no slackening in her pace. And her with 7, and 2 of them in reform school, the girl at the next board sniffed sympathetic agreement. But you've got to come to Weasel Park tomorrow, Saxon. The bricklayers is always lively. Tugs of war, fat man races, real Irish jiggin', and everything. And the floor of the pavilions swell. But the elderly woman brought another interruption. She dropped her iron on the shirt waist, clutched at the board, fumbled it, caved in at the knees and hips, and like a half-empty sack collapsed on the floor, her long shriek rising in the pent room to the acrid smell of scorching cloth. The women at the boards near to her scrambled, first to the hot iron to save the cloth, and then to her, while the forewoman hurried belligerently down the aisle. The women farther away continued unsteadily at their work, losing movements to the extent of a minute's setback to the totality of the efficiency of the fancy starch room. Enough to kill a dog, the girl muttered, thumping her iron down on its rest with reckless determination. Working girl's life ain't what it's cracked up to be. Me to quit, that's what I'm coming to. Mary, Saxon uttered the other's name, with a reproach so profound that she was compelled to rest her own iron for emphasis, and so lose a dozen movements. Mary flashed a half-frightened look across. I don't mean it, Saxon, she whimpered. Honest, I didn't. I would never go that way. But I leave it to you. If a day like this don't get on anybody's nerves, listen to that. The stricken woman on her back, drumming her heels on the floor, was shrieking persistently and monotonously, like a mechanical siren. 2 women, clutching her under the arms, were dragging her down the aisle. She drummed and shrieked the length of it. The door opened, and a vast muffled roar of machinery burst in, and in the roar of it, the drumming and the shrieking were drowned ere the door swung shut. Remained of the episode only the scorch of cloth drifting ominously through the air. It's sickening, said Mary. And thereafter, for a long time, the many irons rose and fell, the pace of the room in no wise diminished, while the forewoman strolled the aisles with a threatening eye for incipient breakdown and hysteria. Occasionally, an ironer lost a stride for an instant, gasped or sighed, then caught it up again with weary determination. The long summer day waned on, but not the heat, and under the roar flare of electric light, the work went on. By 9 o'clock, the first women began.